Hey y'all, Kim here with Expat Wives of Arabia. Thanks for coming back to listen. So my next interview is with an amazing woman named Judith. She is Riyadh-based. Shout out to all my Riyadh ladies. She is going to be the first interview of my year two season two of this amazing platform that I've been blessed to be a part of. She is, you would never know it, she is Hungarian born, but has spent her last decade in the lovely city of London. And she has a vlog, and an Instagram account that you guys can find her at theexpatadventures.com for her blog, and theexpatadventures, as that word is, all lowercase letters on Instagram. So she is recording her adventure there in Riyadh, and I hope you guys benefit and enjoy from the amazing topics that we discuss. It's always different every time I do an interview, and I'm just amazed at how each person can bring up the different perspective and just topics that I haven't really touched on before. So enjoy, and again, thank you so much for listening, truly. Judith.
Hello. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you for letting me collect myself before we started. I usually just start off by, you know, asking like the simple things like where you're originally from, how long ago did you come here? How old your kids are? Who's okay. Judith? Like, yeah. give us an intro.
So I grew up in Hungary. But I spent. Am I the first one that you've interviewed from Hungary?
You are. Ding, ding, ding. I love it. Yay. And you live there.
But I've spent the last 10-ish years before moving to Saudi in London. So that's what we call home now. My husband is from Belgium. We ended up here in Saudi. Just a little bit over a year ago. He works for the Belgian embassy here in Riyadh.
Oh, wow.
Hence why we relocated.
Yeah, you're the first person that I've spoken to that's worked for the embassy. We've met a lot of people on travels that have, you know, they're like, yeah, we work for the U.S. embassy. And we were in Thailand. There was this couple who worked for the U.S. embassy, but in Singapore. It was great because they had been to Thailand 20 years prior, and they came back on their anniversary just to kind of revisit. And they said it was like so different, like everything had changed.
Oh, that's great. We are, you know, we've only been here for a year. It's actually his first posting as a diplomat, but we are already talking about, you know, how interesting it's going to be to come back in 10, 15 years and see how much Saudi's changed, just because already over the period of this year, I can see changes, you know, changes in how people dress or service, you know, quality of restaurants opening up left and right, that sort of thing. So it's definitely going to be really interesting.
Yeah. I'm looking at your Instagram, the Expat Adventures, and it's so funny. It's the one, I clicked on the one with you're pushing the stroller, and then you says, no update this week. I'm overwhelmed to a degree. I can't even begin to describe. For now, it's all about embracing the chaos because I have given up on trying to sort it all out. Oh my God. So this must have been when you first got to Saudi.
Yeah, I mean, it still happens. We've got two young kids, a three-year-old and an almost two-year-old, and we actually have a third one on the way.
Oh, so, my goodness! So,
wow. Life wouldn't really work out without embracing the chaos.
Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, I mean, it was a move like this is overwhelming for everyone. So
how did you and hubby, how did you guys meet, you being from Hungary and him being Belgian?
That's a really funny story. I'm so glad you asked. We actually met in Finland, where we both did an exchange semester. So we were exchange students at the same university. We attended the same Finnish classes. And instead of learning Finnish, we just started going on dates. And that's the start of our relationship and how we've met. Wow. And, you know, later on, we finished our studies back. He went back to Belgium. I returned to Hungary. And that's also the way we ended up in London, was because we needed to find a common ground, you know,
right,
somewhere where we both speak the language, where we could both start out our careers. So long story short.
Do either of you speak Swedish?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
I'm afraid not.
And so you were able, but that was okay. You were able to get by in school.
Oh, definitely. So it was because there are a lot of programs for Europeans to do exchange years abroad. The framework is really, really well established. So, and we both actually study languages. So, you know, in our department, we were just mainly speaking languages we were studying, or English. Everyone speaks English in Finland. It's okay. Absolutely incredible. So from the youngest, like from 5-year-olds to all the way, you know, 80-year-olds, you can just have a conversation because the level of English is really, really good, which, you know, can't be really said for most of the country or a lot of the country.
Yeah, I did not realize that. But so like you started that international, like, travel, go see new place, new culture, and that led you to hubby. And then you guys just continued this wild adventure.
Basically, yeah. So we took that hiatus. And funnily enough, you know, after having our first child, it was also 2020. So, you know, COVID and lockdowns and everything, we finally decided, you know what? We're actually going to settle down in London. He had a good job at the embassy there as a locally hired staff. I had my work, you know. So we were like, let's do this. Let's settle down. And make this our forever home.
And then, we spent a few weeks in London, and we really appreciated how family friendly London was. Like, the pinnacle of, like, you know, like the epicenter of a city, right? Like, it was just so family friendly. Like, it was like New York's not even that family friendly. It was just family friendly. And we were just blown away at that. Like, that was kind of like a conundrum, you know, like being a huge city that's so, like, internationally, globally recognized, but yet it is such a family friendly place.
Oh, definitely. You'll find pockets, you know, with our local parks. And we also lived in an area that was full of children. It was really funny, you know, mom just queuing up at the same coffee shop every morning after nursery drop off. So it was very easy to make friends, you know, just also to fit in. It was really, really good for us as a young family. But then my husband got this job opportunity, and it is an opportunity of a lifetime. You know, it's not something you say no to. So we really had to reassess, reevaluate, regroup.
Did you keep your flat or house back in London? Did you keep
that? Yeah, we did. I'm very emotionally attached to it.
Okay.
And again, you know, having grown up in a different country, London is our chosen home. So, you know, maybe because of that, we're a lot more attached to it, and we're very clear on keeping the house, on returning to visit as often as we can, as, you know, really taking care of those relationships we had with we have with our friends over there.
Yeah, we remember so all the museums there, kids are free. Like, every museum, it's like free for the kids to go to. And then
Notice
how, like, all the you know, like, all schooling is private. It's like every single kid is uniformed.
But it's do you know, the funny thing is it's free. So most schools, obviously, unless you do go to private schools, so even in the government and counter-funded schools, I like the idea of a uniform. My toddler now just started a new prep school here in Riyadh, and He has a uniform and it's just so adorable. So I,
they, you know. Do you have them in British curriculum here in Saudi? Are they at a British school?
Yeah. Okay. The older one just started a British school, yeah. And we intend to keep that going.
Yeah. So because your accent sounds very British.
Thank you. I've worked really, really hard on it.
It does to me. You could have fooled me, girl. When you said hungry, I was like, oh, hell no.
I take that as a compliment. Thank you so much.
I was blown away. Yeah, you know, very interesting.
Us Eastern Europeans have very strong accents and they're hard to share, but somehow I did work on it though. But then again, you know, 10 years in the UK, that really helped.
Yeah, and London at that, right?
Yeah.
So it's amazing how the UK can be, it's such a huge land, and then every single place is slightly different. Like the Welsh, like their accent's different from.
Oh, yeah, we do joke about how difficult it is to understand someone from Newcastle, for example, Scotland. Yeah. You know, there is this sort of stereotype around people that. With all the different accents, but similar, to, you know, it's smaller obviously than the US, but it's got a lot of different dialects and accents as well.
What blows my mind still, like it never ceases to amaze me, is the British people that sound very Australian. I almost mistake them for Australian. I don't know where that region is, whatever region, I don't know, but it's like a very Australian.
I'm not sure. I have to admit, I'm not sure. Shamefully, we haven't traveled enough in the UK. So that's something we're trying to remedy from Saudi Arabia as well. You know, visiting.
No, I hear you. No, before, I mean, prior to us moving to Saudi, I mean, we were lucky to just go to like a water park somewhere, you know, like. So, yeah, we look back and go, oh, we can't wait to go back to the States and actually, like be a tourist in our own country. There is so much of the U.S. that neither nor my husband have seen because we neither had the time nor the money, right?
And yeah.
We were in the thick of it trying to raise our little ones, and both of us had careers. And, yeah, for sure. No, I get it. I'm guilty, too.
Yeah.
Riyadh.
Mm-hmm.
So I envy you guys so much, like, because we're on the expat women of Saudi, and it's just like, and I've only been to Riyadh once. I'm just like, man, y'all have so much stuff. Like where I am in Saudi is very, very remote.
Remote, yeah.
So I'm like, y'all have it made in the shade with glass lemonade.
You know, we're the exception, because a lot of Saudi still, especially compared to Riyadh or Jeddah, is very, very remote. So I acknowledge, I know how lucky we are to be here. It is truly, and as I said earlier, it's ridiculous to see the pace of development. So as I said, new things opening up left and right. You can't keep up with the activities that are going on. We have Riyadh season starting soon, and last year we tried to do activities, we could not keep up, so this year we're not even going to try, we're just going to make a selection for, you know, family friendly stuff and just seeing the main attractions, but it's impossible to keep up. So it really is becoming one of those hubs, you know, like capital cities like London, New York, not to that scale, of course, but I think that's the aim as well. And you can really see the rapid development and how well they're doing.
So having been from Hungary and spending 10 years in London and then coming to the Middle East, what's going on in that head of yours? Like, what do you?
I mean, it's still a huge shock. We were quite confident, my husband and I, coming into this. We also had about 6 months to prepare, knowing that we are going to be in Riyadh and, you know, look into education and where to live and speak to people. But still, nothing kind of, even having moved before, nothing prepares you for something of this scale, to be honest, and especially moving with children. So it was a huge shock. But, you know, we all took it in stride. What helped a lot is that we live on a Western compound. So when we arrived and we finally managed to secure our accommodation and move in, that was a big turning point, because I realized there was a whole ready-made community waiting for me here. You know, my husband, we arrived, he started his job the next day, you know, he had his colleagues, he had his plate full. So he was, I'm not going to say he was full and well taken care of and it was easy for him, far from it. But, you know, but again, that's a different scenario. So I was so grateful to just being dropped into this community, and people are incredibly welcoming. So, you know, just over a year, we've made loads of friends, the kids settled in. So that helped. And to be honest, I'm not sure what we would have done without any knowledge of Arabic, or, you know, just even being aware of social and cultural norms and traditions and all that. So we were really lucky to have people help us and actively go out of their way to guide us and reach out and just become friends.
What were you doing professionally prior to coming to Saudi, and have you continued that?
So I worked in fine arts and luxury for a long, long time. So all the way since graduation in London, I worked for Christie's, the auction house, for about almost 7 years. I was in their ops department. But luckily, I was on maternity leave pretty much for the last 3 years, with sort of, you know, shorter breaks in between, just because our two children are so close together. And the UK has a very generous maternity leave allowance. So it's almost a year.
Oh my gosh. I think in the US it's like,
I know,
something really sad. I want to say like 4 to 6 weeks maybe.
Oh, that's the mandatory. I think it also depends on companies. I do hear from my American friends that, you know, work at, you know, after 2 months their child was born, they were in the office bumping, trying to get through the day with an infant at home. So the UK is it's a really good place, you know, to raise young children. In general, I think they have very good sort of social policies in place for that. So moving here, in terms of having to give up my career and job, wasn't as big of an adjustment, but still it just now, you know, a year on, kind of started to hit me a little bit that, yeah, I'd love to do something. You know, much as I love my life now and dedicating all my time to children and expecting a third one, it's, you know, it's really in the back of my head to do something. Right. So I completed a course earlier this year, a personal styling course, just inspired by how, you know, after giving birth and then moving to a completely different climate, how my body's changed, my lifestyle changed, my environment has changed completely. So I really started to tackle, you know, how I can make myself feel more confident in what I'm wearing. And although Saudi is very traditional in ways, and there are rules around dressing and and modesty, how I can still express myself through fashion, if that makes sense. So I did this course and I loved it. Enjoyed it so much.
It really resonated with you.
You know, and you know, and since then I've spoken to friends and family and they're asking me for advice. So, you know, I might just start reaching out to people and offering complimentary, you know, just chats on, hey, do you need help? Oh, you're moving to Saudi. You know, do you have any questions around dress codes or things like that? Or, you know,
that is like the number one question I think that gets asked on our Facebook group.
Yep.
Yeah. Literally. So that is a huge thing for you to tap into.
Yeah.
Like we would all just like have to tag you if you had like your thing up and going. Like let's just tag Judith. Or yeah, like send them to Judith. Like
yeah. Oh, funnily enough, I just put out, because of those Facebook posts, and I also had messages on Instagram from people that are preparing their move or are already here. I did actually just put out a blog post on the blog on like trying to help guide people in, you know, the general outline of the rules and the traditions and what goes, and, you know, just trying to be inspirational for the newcomers.
I think what you could do is like pair style certain different out, like this one on your Instagram with, you've got like the, it looks like, it's in black and white. So you have like, it's like almost like a trench coat over like a jumper, but you have like a tight, maybe turtleneck, almost looking long sleeve on underneath. Anyways, I'm just saying, like, if you had like little snippets of examples of outfits, right?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I don't know, girl. The details will work itself. No,
that's in a pipeline. So that's what I'm sort of dedicating a lot of my time to. Again, I've been thinking about this a lot, and you know, a lot of us partners here in Saudi, finding a job can be really tedious and difficult, and then there are the regulations and lots.
I would say, besides the clothing question, it's the job question. Yes. It's,
you know, you do have to find, that was the number one advice I always got from more seasoned diplomatic spouses, or, you know, more seasoned expats here in a compound. You have to find your own way.
Yes.
You know, and I found I can keep very, very busy without having a 9-to-5. Because there's so much going on, and B, again, the community just organizes itself around this type of lifestyle where a lot of us are unable to go into an office or even just work remotely to earn money, but we still want to be productive and keep busy and have our own thing besides raising children. So you know, you've got podcast going, and I'm guessing you've got a million things on your plate, and it's just, isn't it so important to have something just for you, and that you feel like, yeah, I was productive today, I did this and that, and that today.
Yeah, I had purpose.
Yeah.
And seeing to purpose in everything you do is important. But like you said, it's a little bit more extra when it's beyond the role of wife and mom. In terms of like wife and mom are the like pretty important roles. But then when there's that other thing, that's a little bit part. It's hard. It's a tough topic. It's a tough conversation because so many people think, you know, that should be your number one everything. And then other people are like, yeah, no, like you should have something for you. And so
and then
you have to live with like, oh, am I being selfish? And it's like, no, girl, you're not, because like when your family sees you have something for you, your kids have this, I'm telling you, like they love it. They love when mom has something for her, and then they see mom going after that and they're like, oh, go ahead, mom. You know, it's just all around, it's just a good thing, I think, in my opinion.
So. They also say, you know, they say, oh, you can't pour from an empty cup. That's enough. If you just dedicate yourself to one single thing for years and years and years without...
Your kids are going to they're going to move out.
Yeah, that as well. I mean, mine are really, really far from that. But
that's you true. Get it though. If you get it now while they're this little, you're gonna be just fine. So on your compound, is it all embassy folks, or your embassy folks are spread out? Like spread out.
So embassy folks are mainly concentrated around a diplomatic quarter. A lot of big embassies have, you know, properties so the employees can live in the DQ. Some smaller ones, so like the Belgian, for example, there's no property for staff to live on.
Hence why we
had to look into compounds, or, you know, private accommodation, so to speak. One of the previous embassy staff that just left before we arrived lived on this particular compound, and she just recommended it to us, and even put us in touch with the sales representatives. So, you know, again, we just got really lucky because we had someone to help us. And after that, it was just my husband negotiating it and then waiting for us to move in.
Sure.
But it's mainly private companies, so staff working for private companies, or they're in consulting, or even military adjacent fields. So it's people from all walks of life, from all different countries, loads of Americans, loads of Brits, Europeans. We have people from all over the place, so from Japan, New Zealand, Australia, Singapore, you know, you name it, we do probably have someone on the compound. We even have another Hungarian, which is so fun because it's a small country. We're very few, but we seem to be everywhere.
Do you conversate in Hungarian with that person?
Yes. It's also, it's nice to hear it, you know, again, especially since both of us have lived abroad for so long. You know, it's actually really nice to use our mother tongue.
Of course. Yes, ma'am. we just got back from Budapest. We spent a few nights. It's so short. I mean, we do these small little trips to take it like a long weekend. And so we'll just pick somewhere that's like close proximity, and all our girls are off and boarding, so like we're in that emptiness kind of phase where like they're already out and doing their thing, living their best life. And so when we do these little trips, they're just so quick. So anyways, we stayed on the pest side. We had like two nights. it was so fun. We loved it.
We absolutely loved Budapest.
My husband never says let's come back to a place. I take that back. He does want to go back to Bali. He really, really enjoyed Bali. But he said he'd go back to Budapest. And I was like blown away because he just never said that.
That makes me feel so good. I love Budapest. And now, did you use Wizz Air to fly there, or did you take a connection somewhere?
That's what sparked the idea to do Vienna and Budapest, was the whole Wizz thing.
Yeah.
We ended up flying Qatar. But what happens with Wizz is if you're not, it's the availability, because they're very limited in their days and times. Mm. So it's just the day and time that's specific, because my husband gets off on a Thursday. So we have to always schedule a flight on a Thursday evening. We usually fly overnight and land somewhere like early, early morning. And then we have like that whole day. And then the whole Sunday. And then I think he had Monday and took like a few days off too. So we ended up doing two nights in Vienna and then two nights in Budapest. And we just took the train in between and did like a one-way flight. Like we flew directly to Vienna and then directly back from Budapest.
Oh, that sounds so fun.
A whirlwind. These little trips that we do are just, there's no way looking at it now. Goodness, even with our teenagers, that would be a lot, because they're like, oh, I don't want to go. I don't do anything.
While they're young, they're still quite portable. But a trip like that.
Without our kids.
Now is the time. I mean, again, Saudi is really surprisingly well connected. Granted, you do have to take, you do have to change to go to Europe, But the rest of the world, we never realized, you know, how easy it was to get to the Seychelles, for example, or go to India, countries we never actually considered us being able to visit because of the distance or the price are now all of a sudden available. So, yeah, I'm glad to hear that you made the most of it as well.
Girl, from the US, it is like there is no way I would have ever been like able to fly all the way to Indonesia. Never.
Yeah.
It is way too far. Like, yeah, really far. I mean, Dave talks about, because like we are so, like, we're rubbing our hands together, so anxious and excited and enthusiastic to go to the Philippines and explore several of those islands out there. He is like determined, like, that's where we're gonna retire. And I'm like, we haven't even been there yet. Like, let us go see it first and then make that decision.
Retreat to a small island somewhere in the Philippines. Doesn't sound too bad, does it?
Exactly.
The kids can go visit. They've got their tropical holiday set for them.
I'm like, what about, you know me, and I'm like, what about the healthcare and this and that, blah, blah, blah. He's like, Thailand's right around the corner. We just go to Thailand. I'm like, oh my God. This man is crazy. I swear, like, I knew once I married him, it was like, you know when you get on a roller coaster? I don't know if you've like ridden roller coasters, but like, you know you're on this ride and you can't get off. Like, it's just like, okay, we're strapping in, just close your eyes and then like let go, like just surrender and enjoy the freaking ride, girl.
Never a boring moment. That's the upside, and also that's kind of the downside. Like, now I'm kind of an anxious person, so you know,
it's like when this
yeah, but at the same time, like, don't, because it's really fun, you know.
Great. What encouraged you to start a blog? I mean, was that in your head prior to leaving, or is it something that came about over like your year of being here?
Well, I guess a little bit of both. Do you know, I mentioned I did want to do something. So I knew that I was, you know, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to work. So I just wanted to tap into what will I do? And writing a blog is so, it seems like the most basic and straightforward thing, especially because speaking to our friends and family and just people in general, they had no idea what to expect with us moving to Saudi Arabia. You know, they
I
all
know.
Had these
I know.
Bizarre questions. Like,
you gotta be careful who you tell.
Yeah. Yeah, so I thought, you know what, it might be quite interesting that as we go along on this journey to share it with primarily with, you know, friends and family. And then I joined these Facebook groups and I started up the Instagram. And basically, I just realized that the same questions pop up over and over again.
Right.
And, you know, again, as we haven't been here that long at all. But, you know, I just started realizing, hey, some people actually find these things I talk about valuable and interesting,
yes,
and
yes,
they want to hear more. So why not keep going? So, yeah, that's how it came about. That's why I sort of keep it up and, you know, try to come up with, again, just scout and see what the most common questions are. And also just, we really like it here. So for me to take a tiny part in dispersing these most common misconceptions,
right,
is, you know, it's important to me. I want to show that this is our experience. We really like it here. You know, come and see for yourself.
Right.
Basically.
Did you have anything like that to look at? Like, on the other end, like, did you have an Instagram account you followed or like, because I didn't. I mean, we've been here, we're going on 9 years, so like I didn't have that. And so
I just think about
like how I would have loved to have had that, like some kind of, you know, like, anyway, so that's kind of like what sparked my podcast idea as well, to hear people say that it's really helped them.
And it's just, you know, and just also putting people's minds at ease. I didn't have that. Yeah. now that we're here, funny enough, I do find more and more resources, but from outside, it was really, really hard to find information. And also,
it's like impenetrable. Yeah. Like an impenetrable inner world, you know, like this little, not, and it's not even being an expat, because it's like, I feel like being an expat in the Middle East is very specific, as opposed to, for instance, you know, you guys were in London, which you were technically expats prior to coming. Yeah. So, you know what I mean? So it's like the expat thing's actually one conversation, and then like expat to the specific geographic
location. Even within the East, because, you know, let's take like Dubai, us in Europe, a lot of us have friends or family who've at least visited. But Dubai. We knew people who've worked in Dubai before. But that, even though it's so close to here, is so different, just because they have all that framework from other Europeans or other non-Muslims about what life is like here. So shedding light on that is pretty important, especially because the country's opening up. More and more people are going to come in.
Yeah, you know. Well, the Crown Prince gets it. Like, he fucking gets it. Right?
And he knows. And that's what they work on.
Communicate, like, the vision. And people are just like, you know, and I'm just like, thank you. Like, we see you, bro. Like, we see you. Thank you so much. But he's got so much opposition because they don't see his vision. Like, he gets it. I love him for it. I wish I could meet the man one day, because he just gets it. And I think there's other Saudis that get it, especially the younger ones that have been West and been educated, or the ones like even here where we are, we're about a 2-hour drive from Bahrain. And like a lot of the younger ones will just live in Bahrain and they will commute to Saudi every day just so they could live in Bahrain.
Yeah. I've met people from Saudis from Qabar when we were holidaying in Bahrain, and they basically just, what you said, they spend most of their time there. But being in Riyadh, you know, I think in my experience, people do embrace these changes. My husband and I often have these conversations, you know, how fast can you go before you actually hit a wall? Because if you think about it, again, you've been here for a long time, so you've seen it happen in front of your eyes, you know, the changes around the dress codes and things like that, you know, just
so it went like in order. Like, the first thing he did was retract the power of the religious police in the Matawa. Okay. So then the second thing he did was allow women to drive. Okay. So then the third thing, I think, after that was saying that you no longer have to wear an abaya. Like, that's, I mean, obviously that's all Sharia law, right? So a lot of those things that were implemented by the Matawa were being like slowly and slowly taken away, because Sharia law isn't like law, it's cultural law. Yeah. So if it's cultural law and you are not of this culture, you should not have to abide by it, right?
Yeah, that's
that concept is like finally freaking getting through people's heads. So.
But it is, you know, but it is hard. And I see, we meet, again, because of my husband's job, we meet a lot of Western educated Saudis. And, you know, that definitely helps them embrace the vision, having, you know, studied abroad or lived abroad temporarily, and understanding exactly what you said, you know. They embrace their traditions and they're ridiculously proud of, obviously, to be Saudi. And they do choose to wear, you know, they do, often women choose to wear a niqab, actually, just to embrace tradition and continue the tradition.
It's a beautiful tradition. It's a beautiful way of how to I mean, honoring, it's a beautiful,
your heritage. Yeah. So, you know, but at the same time, again, when these acquaintances of ours or, you know, come to the West, and I did meet Saudis via my work at Christie's before, and, you know, they come to London and they wear Western clothing, modest, and, you know, often would still wear a hijab, but, you know, just not dress up and fill in a burqa or a niqab. So, you know, they also know, especially younger ones, how to shift and adapt and are quite flexible. And that's so interesting. And I find it amazing that, you know, they're so able to navigate our cultures and customs. But we come here and then we know nothing about theirs. So that's also something that I'm actively trying to work on and you know, learn.
But like we've been discussing, the culture has been so impenetrable. I mean, they just opened up for a tourist visa like within the last 2 years. Like you couldn't even come here unless you freaking worked here. Like they are very protective of their people and very protective of their land and very protective of their ways. So it's just, there's such a huge reverence for things that they don't, and it's like slowly, I think things are being open to, okay, let's open up a little bit and still hold that reverence, but let's open up a little bit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. That's why it's such an exciting time to be here. Yeah, I mean, we did, as diplomats, I don't know if it's common knowledge, probably not. I had no idea before my husband became one. We do have options to, you know, to choose where we'd like to go. We may not end up anywhere where we'd like to go, but we may do. And Saudi was actually on the top of our list precisely because of this. You know, it was so impenetrable and didn't know anything about it. What we knew is that this is the right time to come here, you know, with the Vision 2030, with things just changing so rapidly. Yeah. We sort of want to witness history from the front row, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I have felt very blessed to...
How does a young country navigate finding that balance between staying true to their rich heritage? But also navigating, you know, the modern globalized world and finding that balance. And so
and
that's
why the Crown Prince is the man.
It's amazing.
That has fascinating role at the time that he has. And he's just, he's the one. He's the one.
I mean, they pull off nothing short of a miracle, really, because Saudi has become, again, I've only found out about it since we've been here. It's so attractive for people to come here and work. And, you know, again, they make it so convenient for us, or at least that's how I feel. And that's just our experience, you know, having come from London to Riyadh to a Western compound is just...
Yeah.
You know,
I have two sides to that. I agree with you. I think they go very out of their way to make Westerners feel as comfortable as they can. And a huge part of that is, let's just put it out there, it's just the salary. The salary is very attractive. So there's that off the bat. And you know, because they know, you know, we used to say, with a little joke, we say, oh, it's the apology check. Did you get your apology check? Because it's like, I think they do know how hard it is for us to come and integrate. So there's that. And then we work with a company, it's an oil company. So there's been people that have been here. When we got here, there were people that had been here 20 years and now we know people now that are still here. They've been here 30 years, 35. I mean, so if you want to talk about, let's not just talk about the last decade. Let's talk about the last 2-3 decades.
Wow.
Yes. Like there's people that have been here that long, or we know people that have come here as children and their parents were here.
Yeah.
As, you know, teachers, school teachers or whatnot. And now they're back as an adult carrying it on, you know, because that's how much of a, you know, opportunity and life-changing thing it's been for them.
It's
And then the other thing Saudi does is, okay, so for people that come to Saudi that are west of here, you know, it's a huge perspective shift, right? So then that there's people that come from the east, and for them Saudi is west, right? So Saudi for them is very progressive, when we're coming from the west to Saudi going, we're going back a little bit.
Very true. Yeah.
So it's like that is a huge concept that I would love to delve into more. You know, people that come here from the east, like Malaysia or the Thailand or Indonesia.
That is a perspective.
When they come here, it's the bee's knees, girl. So happy to be here. So happy to be here. Their employee engagement, their, if you take any type of like poll on happiness, it is through the roof. Through the roof. And then you go to like the Western cultures that come here, and it's like, you know what I'm saying? We're pretty happy, but sometimes we have some stuff to say.
Weird how different, again, the perspectives can be. But it's really true what you said. I also found it's funny how hard it can be to leave. So some people, a lot of our friends have come here. Some of them have been here for 5-10 years, and they say, at first we came here for, you know, on a 2-year contract,
right,
but then we just liked it so much, and, you know, frankly the money is so good that just want to stay and enjoy it. I get that it can be quite hard to leave. Our time is definitely limited here, just again by the nature of my husband's job. We have a 4-year limit. So we already, before we came here, we already knew we'll be here for 4 years. So maybe that's why we were also very enthusiastic, because we knew we had to make the most of it. We have to do everything we want to do and see everything we want to see, because we're on a clock.
Yeah, I see that you've been to Al Ula, and I'm so ashamed because I've only been to Riyadh once, and I haven't even been to Al Ula yet or Jeddah.
Oh, please come back to Riyadh. I'm going to take you around to all my favorite places and show you around. Oh, and I'd love to do that.
But can you get a babysitter?
Yes. Yes, I can. I couldn't get one in London, but that's the other huge advantage of Saudi. It's completely normal here to have a nanny. Yeah. It's not something that only the richest can afford. It is actually something that's available to us. So it really makes it easier to have a third child, not going to lie.
You guys have a live-in nanny or no?
Yeah, we do have one now.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I was like panicking for you. Okay.
No, that helped us make the decision to take the plunge. not gonna lie. Knowing that we have help is such a huge thing. We didn't have it in the UK with, you know, both our families being scattered around in different countries. So that's another aspect for here.
My kids were in, my twins were in first grade and my oldest was in fourth when we moved here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think about, had we taken the opportunity, like, man, because I had, so just to sum it up, my twins, when they were born, my oldest was 3. So I think about, oh my goodness, if I could have been here.
Can you imagine not having to do everything by yourself?
It's a little rough.
Yeah, that was one of the first things when we came here, and we found out, I had no idea. So any young families, listen up, nurseries are only half day. So 1 o'clock, it's halas over, all children go home. So, you know, that we were thinking, what do families do when both partners work? And so that was our first few weeks. Like, that is really difficult. This is really stressful. You know, what are we going to do? So we went to the playground and we just realized, oh, these are all nannies, you know. Right. So that was, and that was also when we found out that it's actually very common, not easy to find help, but it's absolutely, it's manageable. So that was a very pleasant surprise, you know, just finding out that we will be able to get help, a babysitter, yeah, a nanny, you know. It's amazing. We haven't, before moving to Riyadh, we haven't had a date night in like 2 years.
Oh my god.
So, you know, we take full advantage of it, and we just it's just that. A completely different lifestyle for us. So so just enjoying it right now.
Yeah. And it's like, what a, like, okay, so the nannies that come over are, again, it's like a huge opportunity for them as well, you know, changing their generations when they send their money home, and they're able to, it's like, again, Saudi is the Middle East, obviously comes with the name, but it's like, it's in the middle.
Yeah.
And it brings these two things. It bridges so many different things together.
True.
That makes it such a special place to be. So what would you, if you had advice for anybody, what would your saying be, your quote be? What would you say to somebody?
Oh, wow.
Thinking about moving, or?
It's really just definitely thinking about moving. Take that plunge, because now is the time. And what I said about if you're a partner accompanying your husband or wife, and you don't know if you'll be able to work, or you know, how you're going to cope with a complete change of lifestyle, just know there is a community, a very, very supportive expat community out here. So you're not going to be alone. People have been through it, and we all help each other through it. I think mainly that. That's a hard one.
Good stuff. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's usually pretty much everyone has the same idea and answer, but it's just worded differently. I'm so appreciative that you came on and we had this chat, and we were able to get it out to everybody else that's, you know, willing to listen to us talk. And we all have the same, like, it's like same but different. We all have like similar stories, but everyone's is very unique. And I love the fact that I could give people a platform. And Judith has both Instagram and a blog at Expat Adventures. It's all lowercase, right?
Yep. The Expat Adventures on Instagram. And it's...
The Expat the, Adventures.
And it's theexpatadventures.com.
For your blog.
Yes.
And so check her out.
If anyone's interested in my ramblings.
Yes. I love it. I never personally got into blogging myself, but the podcast thing really, really, it brings me so much joy. And
I can hear that. I love the episodes. And again, it's just tying this community together. And bringing women together with, again, just the same, but still very different and unique experiences. It's brilliant.
Yes, ma'am. And I will take you up on that offer. I mean, it's like a straight shoot. It's like a 4-hour drive. Boom. It's like all desert, but it's a great drive. I'll come up there and hang out anytime.
Definitely. Please do. You're always welcome.
Or have you done that glamping adventure there up in Riyadh?
Not yet. It is on my list. It's apparently just outside of Riyadh. So we were talking about doing it this winter with some friends, because it seems to be also kid friendly and, you know, just a really chill.
Yeah, really I'd come up for that. That looks really fun.
Great.
So we'll keep in touch. But you have a great day. I appreciate you so much.
Thank you so much, Kim.
Yeah, holler at me. Thanks, Judith.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Enjoy your day.